Thanks for listening to Access Utah. We are talking about protests, social movements. There's a lot of energy on the left these days, just as there was a lot of energy on the right in the years of Obama. And we're trying to put this in historical context. We're asking you, have you marched? Would we consider marching in the future? What do you think of the protest? Are you for or against? And this critical question of, in this age of increasing polarization, how do we get together? How do we talk to each other? And we have with us USU professors Laura Gelfand and Jason Gilmore. Jason Gilmore gave us a little glimmer of hope. He said maybe an outcome here, silver lining in these clouds is that the parties could complete a realignment. And at the end of that realignment, perhaps we can reach across the aisle, work across the aisle, right?
Well, I think what it comes down to is you're seeing, again, a new generation that is demanding that we stop the broken politics of Washington. And right now, Donald Trump went in saying he was going to break up Washington. And actually, Obama walked in saying, I want to unite. I want to reach across the aisle. It hasn't worked in either of those cases. So as a professor, I look to this next generation, and I really do see a different way of seeing the world. They've functioned in these technological devices. They understand community in new ways. Even though we're in this hyper-individualized culture, I think their use of social media has, even though parents would like to argue differently, has actually brought them together in ways that we don't fully understand. They organize, they interact with one another in ways that, at least from my generation, we don't do, right? Even though I do engage in those things. So I do see a glimmer of hope in the possibility of new media technologies providing pathways of unity, right? Mm-hmm. But I think what it comes down to is that, at least from my perspective, is that we need partisans to jump down or come a little bit far or a little bit in towards the center away from what feels right and understand that we need to reach across the aisle to somebody who we may have categorized in negative ways before, but that we understand them as people who are reasonable, came to the table, even if they voted for Trump or Hillary, whoever you were against, that they're swayable people, that they're reasonable, that they voted the way they did because they were concerned about the world, concerned about their family, not because they wanted to destroy things. Right, there are some on the right now laughing at the tears of the liberals because they lost, and same thing when Obama won. You know, there are those folks, but the grand majority of us are much more in the middle, and we want things to function. So I think what it comes down to is we need to kind of culturally start to create those spaces and start to back away from what feels good. I mean, I like going to sites that agree with absolutely everything that I believe. It's delicious, right? Mm-hmm. I walk away self-righteous. Mm-hmm. I'm right, right? But I have separated myself from anybody mm-hmm. else. Mm-hmm. And so I've got to read some things that maybe I don't agree with.
Yeah. That's what I tell the students here at the station.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a conservative, read the New York Times or, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. And if you're liberal, pick up the Wall Street Journal, yeah. you know. So let's go next to our next email. And you can email us as well, upraxcess@gmail.com. This is Father Rick in Cedar City. I usually give first names, but since I don't know how many Catholic priests there are in Cedar City, probably not an incredible amount. So this is Father Rick Sherman, Christ the King Catholic Church in Cedar City. Father Rick, I've been thinking a lot about you as well. You have some interesting perspectives, and so I'm glad you've emailed back in. Father Rick says, hi, Tom. Here's some thoughts I'll share for your upcoming program. Thanks for all your good work. The attachment is an overview of social teaching I referred to, so we won't get to the attachment. We'll get to the email, though. He says, I'm a Catholic priest living in Cedar City. I believe that part of the challenge with our civil discourse is that we seem to have lost the capacity for asking a deeper set of questions. It's possible we create these deeper polarities, consciously or subconsciously, in order to avoid deeper questions and deeper introspection. Without sounding too trite, a country where at least 75% of the population, when polled, still professes to be Christian, in that country, we should sincerely ask, what would Jesus do? Anyone familiar with the Gospels knows what a radically different perspective that requires. In my work in association with different interfaith groups, I know that almost every denomination has its own set of social teachings which help guide daily life with a biblical perspective and values. The guidelines espoused by the different traditions are refreshingly similar, and much collaboration already occurs throughout society and even at the legislature. A real sincere application, however, requires a genuine willingness to enter into this deeper spiritual level of awareness. It's a necessary struggle. In the 2012 election, self-proclaimed devout Catholics, Vice Presidential candidates Joe Biden and Paul Ryan, engaged in a fairly robust but intelligent and civil discourse without name-calling or disrespect. Both were remarkably astute at shaping Catholic social teaching to mesh with their particular ideologies, but at least it was civil and could leave a good faith listener with a deeper set of questions to ponder. There are working models for better discourse, but we must risk the personal and social transformation that come with deeper questions. That's Father Rick in Cedar City. So some very good ideas there, Father Rick. And that last sentence, there are working models for better discourse, but we must risk personal and social transformations that come with deeper questions. That's the risk, but also the opportunity.
Definitely.
Thanks for that, Father Rick. Let's go to our next email, which comes in from Ron. Ron says, I don't think the protests will influence the Republican policy at all. Mind you, I've been a Republican since I like Ike. It's going back a ways. The Republican Party has gone somewhere I can't go, and I don't think they'll come back. They've gone so far, especially Trump, that they've lost touch with all reality and will only explain away all resistance as quote-unquote hired protesters, etc. I fear also that in a try to stop that movement, NPR is becoming Fox News in reverse. That's why I've not contributed yet. I want to see if you become as negative as Fox News has been in the last 8 years. I'd be very sad if, instead of coming up with solutions, if some can be found, you treat Trump as Fox did Obama, and we further the divide. I guess what we citizens could do is ignore both parties, like Trump is doing to the court system, and go on about our lives like we've been doing. Of course, someday it will hit the fan. I hope you have a good garden and good neighbors to get you through what's coming. We in rural Utah will be better off than most, but it still won't be easy. Here's hoping for some truth and light. That's Ron in somewhere in rural Utah. What about this? That struck me.
Yeah.
The NPR Fox News comparison, and of course, I work for an NPR affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping, of course, that we don't become Fox News. I don't know what your take, Jason, is on.
My take is that that's not going to happen. My take is if you want to see what the equivalent of Fox News is, bring up Huffington Post. It shouts down Republicans. It shouts down Trump in the very same way that Fox News does to liberals. So if you want to see what the equivalent is, you need to go that direction, Huffington Post. And some programs on MSNBC, although not all programs. If you really want to see the equivalent of the rhetorical tactics, the same type of coverage, but NPR is the most like middle ground. They hire the most non-political professional journalists in the industry, right? They are championed by other journalists on NPR and PBS. They are seen as a gold standard among journalists. So if you're looking for some middle ground sustained coverage that is evidence-based, that says let's look at the evidence, not at beliefs, NPR is where you want to be.
And UPR, I just wanted to speak for UPR. We know we're very concerned about keeping it real, fair, and balanced, and that we take that seriously. And Ron, I would say, chime in from time to time and let us know how we're doing.
Well, and there was a very interesting moment, I think, in the election where all of a sudden on NPR they finally started saying, that's not true. When Trump would lie, they would say, that's not true. And it took a while. And all of that started to happen as a lot of media outlets started to question what was the role of the media in this new environment. But I think NPR has been really sort of upfront and in the forefront of making sure that listeners know what is true, what is not true, when someone's lying, all of that in a really important, positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the news, I would also say to Ron, have a little patience with the news media as they try to get their footing in this new new Twitter era, you know, and with President Trump. But I think by and large, most of the media are sincere, right, in trying to get it right.
Yeah.
Next up is Susan in Newton. Susan says, just a couple comments. We have a rally, or you might call it a protest, in Logan every Saturday at 4 p.m. in front of the county courthouse. This has been going on since last November. The issues being addressed change from week to week, depending on what has been in the news and what politicians are doing. And every person who comes to the rally has a different perspective. Some are concerned about the environment. Some are focused on women's rights, the treatment of immigrants, health care, and so on. Protesting is an important part of democracy. Even though we may be in the minority, we need to have our voices heard in the community. The majority rules, but the minority keeps them honest. That is to say, thinking about the whole community and not just the majority. Special speakers come to our rallies at least once a month and talk about their humanitarian efforts. We've hosted the CASH Clean Air Consortium and the CASH Refugee and Immigrant Center, for example, and we as a group take steps to help these organizations. If anyone is interested in staying informed about activities, they can go to Facebook, search for Stand Together Logan, and join the group. We have noticed lots more affirming beeps by passing cars this week. I think that is because people are beginning to feel as if they can be more open about their feelings about what's going on in our government. We can thank those who have been brave enough to stand up for what they believe in for that. They have opened a way for people to express a minority opinion. Personally, it's helpful for me to stand with people who are thinking about what the changes in our government mean to real people in our communities. The situation with our unresponsive representatives in Washington makes people feel powerless. Rallies or protests are one way people can take their power back. That's Susan in Newton. I love the image, mm-hmm. And it's kind of a metaphor. Some are protesting, some are driving by honking.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're all in different places in that metaphor at different times. Probably more people in the protests than driving by honking nowadays.
I don't know. I think it depends. I've been to a couple little protests in Logan, which they have been really affirming. But I think you've got people who are honking, and then you've got people who are coal rolling you. So there's a kind of combination of things happening there.
Right. Let's go to our next email, which is Blake. Blake says, when the popular vote was overwhelmingly won by Democrats and the Republicans refused to cooperate for 8 years, why would we stonewall them and enjoy the Republican implosion? So, Jason, I can understand that. Blake, I totally understand where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's the best way to go. I really want to, I'm not making comment. I wonder if that's the way to go. You were talking about, you can go to websites that totally agree with you, Jason.
Sure.
You come away feeling righteous,
mm-hmm.
but do we get anything done?
So I think these are two separate issues because that is the way of the resist movement. It's just that is the momentum of that movement. It is about resisting. It is not about reaching across the aisle. It's not about legitimizing the Trump administration. And it's about paying back for what Democrats felt Republicans, well, maybe not just felt, but that Republicans did to them for 8 years of Obama's administration. So that's the momentum of that social movement. It's about resisting. It's not about reaching across the aisle. That said, there are still opportunities within the American body politic for us to make those spaces to reach across, right? We talked a little bit about this. The women's movement could find a space to say all women are welcome here. And it's not, again, it's not that they close the doors to that, but to say, hey, here are some spaces where women who are interested in championing women's issues, who are pro-life and don't fit the mainstream that have been mostly pro-choice, but there's still a place for you here because we do share some interests and some causes, and that Trump stands against. Pence is seen as somebody who's not good for women's issues as well, both on the right as well as on the left. So I think politically, the Democrats are not going in the reach across the aisle. In fact, they have been the ones who have always said, you know what, we're going to entertain at the beginning. When Trump first got elected, they said, we're going to entertain everything. We'll give them we'll give them hearings. We'll hear them out and we'll vote our consciences. And then the base went, no, you won't. So that is definitely not politically in Washington how people want things to function. But one thing that I'll say is that politics in Washington is a different thing from politics locally, right? And a lot of the power in American politics is within local legislatures, state legislatures, and they are actually known for reaching across the aisle, for building consensus, because they have to get things done, right? Mm-hmm. So it is happening and will continue to happen, but at the federal level, I don't think we're going to see that just yet.
And Laura Gelfand, I want to get to your comment. We'll do this after we hear from Ilona. Ilona in Logan has called us. Glad you did. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having this program and having me on. I just have a comment with regard to the person who questioned the veracity or the balance in UPR or NPR's reporting. And I don't know if that person is aware. There are a number of websites that where you can go and check facts. And I do a lot of fact-checking. I watch all the cable news programs, and I learn from all of them. But here are a couple places online where you can check facts. One is Snopes.com, S-N-O-P-E-S.com. Another is TruthOut.com. Another one is Facts.com. And maybe you guys can throw in some more names of more fact-checking websites. So just thought that I think we should all watch as many news sources and read as many news sources as possible. And I just also want to say, when you read news sources in magazines and newspapers, there's a lot more independent resourcing for those things and a lot more vetting in terms of what's factual and what isn't before it gets into print, as opposed to what gets on the internet or even on cable news. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ilona.
I'll listen to your response on the radio.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks, Ilona. Okay. So Snopes.com, TruthOut.com, Facts.com. Any others you would suggest?
Yeah, those are
those are the big ones.
The good ones, and I think that's a good suggestion. Check the facts, right? That's a good way to hold media to account.
Sure,
great. We have Betty, I believe, from Washington County.
Yes.
Betty, thanks for calling. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Right. I was thinking that the entire Utah delegation to Washington was against Trump. Some didn't vote for him. Now they are just falling in line. And the town hall meeting that Chavis had and that he so arrogantly dismissed really makes me question why we elect people that have such a narrow view. If you have won, yes, legitimately, all the Republicans and some of the Democrats in your state, why are you not representing everybody in your state? Why are you just representing the people that voted for you? That doesn't seem to be democracy to me. And that he wouldn't listen to the legitimate complaints about people, especially asking him to do his job on his committee to investigate the ethics of the person that was elected president and his conflicts of interest. That is just arrogance to me. And he dismissed every protester in there. So I'm just saying, when you're elected, you still are. You're the representative of everybody, not just those who voted for you. Also, I certainly hope that Senator Hatch decides to fade into his retirement and give somebody else a chance. I think he's way, way past time. Thank you.
Thanks for those comments, Betty. I would just say, speaking of Orrin Hatch, I believe many of the members of Congress, the Utah delegation, kind of had public troubles, heartburn with their candidate at times. But I think Orrin Hatch was pretty solid.
Yeah,
through the whole thing.
Chaffetz definitely
went
back and forth. Yeah.
And we'll just let Betty's comment about Orrin Hatch stand. I think there are some Republicans waiting in the wings who share your opinion, Betty. And some of his constituents as well. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, as Hatch would say, seniority equals power, right? And so that's the argument he's making. Here's a tweet that's come in from our friend Matt LaPlante. He said, all the apps and scripts in the world aren't worth, and I'm going to change your word, Matt, darn, compared to the power of voting. And so both of you, I think you were telling me that there is some movement in this, called the Resist Movement, of engagement people who are talking about running for office.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people are focused on the local. There's a big movement there to put more people, to run more people for election, to try to get more Democrats running, to try to have at least more liberal Republicans running. We had a long conversation about whether, as a Democrat, it makes sense to actually re-register as a Republican in the state of Utah, because you have much more of a say in what's happening, which is an interesting thing to think about. And I don't know what I think about that. But there are lots of different ways in which it's going to happen. But I think it is going to have to start locally. And I think politics, this was such an incredibly ugly campaign that it turned off a lot of people. I certainly would not want to get involved in politics in that way. I mean, I think it's just gotta be brutal,
it's gotta be tough, yeah.
So you'd have to have a pretty thick skin to get there. But we really need new blood in both parties.
Yeah. I think, can I add to that just real quick? I think an interesting part of that is that, yes, votes count and votes count massively. But I think what is lost, and a lot of people kind of criticize social movements a lot of the time, saying, well, what are you really going to get done? But the groundswell and the momentum of social movement is what brings people out in midterm elections. It's what brings people out in elections and influences them to vote, right? So the apps of people feeling involved that when they called their representative then reminds them that I need to continue this momentum, this active citizenship and vote, right? So, it's all intertwined, right? The idea of being involved now then translate into voting, as well as translates into making sure people around you vote and understand the potency of their own votes as well. So just wanted to add that in.
And I said, Gelfand, I'd give you a chance to respond to Blake. I don't know if you have a brief response. I'll remind you just a couple sentences. When the popular vote was overwhelmingly won by Democrats and Republicans refused to cooperate for 8 years, why would we stonewall them and enjoy the Republican implosion?
I love
this.
My husband said, don't get angry when you're on there. So it's like, okay. It's hard not to feel that way because it was incredibly frustrating watching the obstructionism for the last 8 years and to see so many of Obama's policies that were popular turned around within the last 3 weeks. I mean, we're only 3 weeks into this. It has been really disconcerting, and I think it's hard not to sort of have that response. And it probably isn't the most productive response, but I do expect our elected officials they represent us, and they need to represent all the voices they're hearing. And when I call Senator Hatch's office daily, I would hope that would have some impact. It would in some way be taken into consideration, because I know I'm not the only one.
Let's go next to Andy. And by the way, Andy, in his signature line, he describes himself as a member of Indivisible Logan. So I guess Indivisible has a chapter in Logan. I expect other places in Utah as well. So Andy and Logan, there most certainly is contention and a divide in our country today. Perhaps the divide that is seen is the product of a large segment of the population who have been encouraged to hold on to beliefs over which the issue is not simple, quote-unquote, disagreement, but rather that we have long ago litigated these beliefs on the battlefields of Gettysburg, Shiloh, Antietam, Vicksburg, or in Guadalcanal, Morocco, Anzio, Normandy, and decided at those times that those beliefs were not valid or legitimate, that this isn't a case of, quote-unquote, simple disagreement, but about that there are people clinging to things that we know without a doubt to be wrong. I would argue it is far more civil to stand up now and make some noise before the founding patriotic principles of our country is founded on are trampled and lost. On a micro level, if folks like Jason Chaffetz want events such as a town hall to be more calm and civil, common sense event organizing tactics should be used. These would include providing microphones for those who wish to comment and an organized way for those with questions to ask them. That's Andy in Logan. Let me start with Laura Gelfand on this. I would say I was reading in Politico recently a town hall by a Tea Party congressman, Justin Amash, in Michigan, I think it was. And his tactic was he sat down for, I don't know, hours on end and asked and answered every last question. He didn't agree with his constituents on many things, but he sat to the what seemed to be the not the bitter end, but the civil end, I guess that's one way you can handle things.
And it would be really nice to see that. I know that there's a movement afoot to try to have more town halls and to be calling for town halls in the next couple of weeks, I think. And if our legislators refuse to have them, then we will have them ourselves and invite them. So that's a really interesting movement that's happening too. I think they're delivering petitions today because we do need to see them. I think they need to see us as well. I think it's easy to ignore phone calls and emails and postcards and everything else. But it's a lot harder to ignore people when they're right in front of you. And if they're being civil and they're expressing their concerns, why would you not listen to them? I mean, that makes sense. And so the more of that sort of interface with one another and with our legislators and having it be civil is, I think, really important to try to move forward.
Just want to have you respond to, and about alert our guests that we're not 20 minutes over, half an hour over. So whatever your schedules are, and we appreciate you staying as long as you can.
Sure.
A very important topic.
Happy to. So
to Andy's point, to get to his point to make it more explicit, he mentions Gettysburg, Shiloh, Antietam.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting to civil rights. And
sure.
He's probably getting, I don't want to push this too far without Andy being able to confirm this, but pushing it to what some see as sort of legitimizing and giving space for racist
sure.
attitudes, you know, that some saw in the Trump campaign. And Guadalcanal, Morocco, Anzio, Normandy, I'm not sure exactly what civil virtues he's referring to there that were settled mm-hmm. long ago.
Sure.
But this general idea that some things we thought we had totally settled and correctly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now some are saying is it maybe a pushback against those values and norms.
Sure. Without a doubt. I think a lot of people are concerned, and rightly so, about vulnerable populations within the United States, be them immigrant populations, legal immigrant populations that can be targeted not only by, government, but also by bigoted people throughout this country. And that is definitely an issue that that we're hashing out again on the national level, and that was infused in Trump's presidential rhetoric. And that is something that is definitely concerning. But I think that's very much a part of why the social movements immediately rose to the occasion. I mean, Donald Trump dropped that executive order late on a Friday, like... You know, what presidents always do late on a Friday is drop something because they don't think it's going to get a lot of coverage. It's just going to kind of float underneath the radar until Monday when news is focused on something else. And people immediately rose to that. So what you see is a lot of people recognizing the potential threat down the road, and they are safeguarding now to make sure that we don't go down the road of severe discrimination against vulnerable groups within mm-hmm. our population, mm-hmm. understanding that the United States is not only white Christians, right? That there is a diversity of religions and races and people from all around the world that make up this country, and that is what makes us exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
I think you definitely see people. That is a huge part of the social movement right now mm-hmm. is that they see the potential of going in a backwards direction where we as a country want to continue moving in a forward direction, mm-hmm. Setting the example for the rest of the world as a country that does not discriminate.
Mm-hmm. Laura Gelfand, before we go to the next email, which, by the way, is addressed specifically to you, so I'll alert you. So running through my mind throughout this, you know, now hour and a half discussion has been, I'll have you respond to this, a lot of the things that people in support of the resist movement are saying, the high stakes,
right.
democracy at stake, et cetera, resist at all costs, resist preemptively. Were said by the Tea Party movement.
It's interesting, isn't it?
And so now the shoe's on the other foot. I don't know what thoughts are going through your mind about are you having a reevaluated opinion of the Tea Party, for example? I don't know. You know, what are your thoughts?
I certainly understand more than I think I ever have the commitment to America, to this great experiment. That is our democracy. And I think those people felt that way as well. They felt that their democracy, their country was threatened. for the reasons they felt, and they felt it strongly enough to go out there. And it's the same thing for us. I think it's exactly the same thing that's pulling us out. I mean, I honestly have never felt so proud to be an American as I have in the aftermath of that election and watching everyone's response to that.
Let's go to the next email. This is from, she signs herself a hopeful feminist. So she says, hi, Tom. I have heard many stating their belief that, the headline is for Laura, the Women's March. So I have heard, this is what hopeful feminist says. I have heard many stating their belief that the Women's March was frivolous and ineffective. Some have said, why don't they actually get out and do something in their community other than just complaining about it, quote unquote. While I didn't march myself, I strongly supported the efforts of those who did. The march got people talking, and to me, that's the first step in change. The march got people talking about women's issues that didn't even realize that they existed before. We got the ball rolling. Laura talked about the diversity at the march. What about their women who were prohibited from attending the march based on their pro-life stance? I believe that the feminist movement is still very needed. However, to me, feminism is not based on a single issue. Isn't the feminist movement about acceptance and empowering women to take a stand? Why should pro-choice women's voices be able to dictate the feminist stand? Where do I fit in as a pro-life feminist? Is there room for me in your picket lines? I hope that we can keep the movement going and striving to achieve equality for women in all aspects of life. So this echoes what Jennifer Invernal said.
Absolutely.
Let me have you tackle that one first. This particular charge that pro-life women were not allowed at the march?
Well, as Jason said, that was sort of a made-up thing. There was a lot of I don't know how to describe it. It was sort of almost like a foam on top as the march was kind of coming into being in D.C., where there were a lot of rumors. There were a lot of sort of destructive rumors that were out there. And I think that's one of them, because who would stop you? There were no gates, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyone who wanted to could be there. And it was welcoming and inclusive, and in every single way it could be. And if you go online and look at the Women's March website, they actually have their principles, and it is open to everyone. They wanted it to be as inclusive as possible. And one of the things that I found most powerful about it being a women's march is the fact that as slightly over half the population, we represent everything. We encompass everything. Black women, Hispanic women, gay women, any, you name it, we have it. And so it is as inclusive as possible. And that was part of the power of that movement and that march.
And going as broad as possible, not just specifically women's marches, but feminism, quote unquote, mm-hmm. as a broad movement. This question from a hopeful feminist, where do I fit in as a pro-life feminist? What would you say?
Come on out. Okay. You know, right. Really, I think feminism is a really broad umbrella, and it's incredibly simple. It's just that women are equal. All people are equal. It's a incredibly, so there's nothing in that statement. There's nothing in that belief that isolates or takes anyone out of it. It's about being more inclusive and being more fair.
Let me direct this part of the question, this question of effectiveness, to you, Jason, and mm-hmm. let me add in a article in Medium.com that I've been thinking about for a couple of weeks since I read it. Mm-hmm. This is by Jake Fuentes. The headline is, this immigration ban is a head fake, and there are more serious constitutional issues, and Trump is kind of a conspiracy theory that Trump is testing the waters to see how far he can go.
Sure.
And so we'll leave that for another day, but one of his points was interesting. He said, you know, there's a danger in marching, because mm-hmm. you can go to a march and you can come home and you can feel good, but how effective was it?
Sure.
And what are the most effective means of resistance if you feel like you need to resist Trump at this point?
Sure. I'm always intrigued by people who hate fair weather fans. Fairweather fans is a phenomenon, right? I mean, if you love the Denver Broncos and they suck throughout the year, but you're going to the game and, you know, the the stands are empty. As soon as they start playing well, all of a sudden the stands fill, and all of a sudden you have more right to be there than they do. I never quite understood that, right? Because when those Fairweather fans come in, they create fervor, they create energy, they help the team, they help the perception of support. They add to that. And for us to criticize them because they weren't there before is counterproductive, right? In fact, where they should be focusing their attention is saying, wow, you brought great energy. Let's see what else you could do moving forward to be part of this, to create even more fervor, to have this be a bigger phenomenon. And that's where the energy needs to be placed. The idea that protesters criticize fellow protesters is the counterproductive part.
You bring to mind one of my favorite quotes from the past. It's a USU football coach in the distant past. He's no longer here. He said, you know, that bandwagon is rolling down. If you got off it, you can't get back on. And, he's...
Yeah.
I thought, well, wait a minute. Don't you want people to get back on?
Mm-hmm.
Win a couple of games, you want people back, right?
So, yeah, that goes doubt.
So it goes to your point there. So let's go to the, by the way, you're listening to Access Utah, and we're into our second hour on this topic, and we appreciate our guests staying with us, and we appreciate all the comments we have with us, Laura Gelfand and Jason Gilmore. Obviously, a lot of energy on this topic, which is why we're going longer than we usually do. Here is... Let's see. We already treated that one. Let's go next to Carl. Carl says, I feel energized by the marches and the town halls. I think we have a real chance to change things, especially locally. I've never felt that I had any representation in this state. I'd love to march. I'm not into social media, so how do I find out about the marches? I always seem to read about them after the fact. So, Laura Gelfand, how does Carl find out about the marches?
Well, I think you had a caller who talked about the one that's happening in Logan every week,
right,
which is in front of the courthouse. Is it Fridays?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
at 4 p.m., I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's weekly, and that's a really nice way to connect with people. There are a bunch of, Facebook, and I don't do Facebook either, but there are lots of different sites.
Let me just correct. Saturdays. Saturdays, 4 p.m. in front of the county courthouse.
Okay.
So, Carl, if you're in Logan, Saturdays, 4 p.m. is the place you go every Saturday. So,
great. And then I think there's a way to find out through that. And then I've been trying really hard to find one kind of clearinghouse website locally, mm-hmm, where we could kind of put everything that was there and have a calendar. And I'm sure somebody is working on that. So I would love, please let me know if you're doing it, because I would love to participate with something like that, because there's a lot happening right now. It's hard to keep track of all of it.
I think so, because this is a left-leaning movement, and aligned with Democrats much of the time, you can go to the Democrat website. Bernie Sanders has his OurRevolution.com. All of those have organizing things that have calendars that say, hey, here are the upcoming events, here are the upcoming protests, things like that. So it's not just on social media, but it does take going on and signing up for a mailing list or going on a regular basis and checking for those events. But there are sites nationally and locally that are doing their best to kind of corral all this stuff. And if we really think about this, these social movements have only been happening over the last month.
Mm-hmm.
So, hold tight. They're going to organize. They're going to put these things together, because these huddle ups, these small get togethers are the ones that are saying, okay, we need to organize. We need to make sure that we have a space for these. So if you're not finding it now, you'll see it coming down the road.
Here's an email from Steve in Beaver Dam. He says, one of your commentators said that unlike in Washington, state politicians reach across the aisle. He says, nonsense. The recent actions of North Carolina Republicans when a Democratic governor was elected this last cycle is a salient example of how untrue that is. And this New York Times article he gives the link from earlier this week illustrates how Republican politicians around the country are just as inflexible and unwilling to work with Democrats as they are in Washington. I don't know if either of you have comment on that.
Well, there are definitely instances of that. It is definitely happening in local politics, but it's not happening at the level that it is in Washington, because there are just certain things that are not as politically charged in a state legislature,
yeah.
right? They just don't bring out the groups and bring out the national media attention and things like that. They're just regular everyday laws that happen to benefit your constituency as much as they do mine. So you do see more reaching across the aisle in local legislatures. Mm. You do see stonewalling as well. So in the case of when Republicans have a majority, sometimes they're inflexible, and sometimes when Democrats have a majority, they're inflexible. But you do see a lot more reaching across the aisle and a lot more cross-voting in local legislatures.
Mm.
It's just functional government,
right?
And it needs to be functional government at the state, city levels, much more at the than at the national level. Like, national level can be stonewalled, which is why they do it so actively mm-hmm. there, because it's not as – like, passing the budget is something that if it runs awry, we need it right now. But there's not as many timely issues in the national legislature as there are in local legislatures. Mm-hmm. So that's why you see that happening.
So that's all the comments so far. Keep them coming to upraxcess@gmail.com. We'll keep this conversation going, upraxcess@gmail.com. So final comments. Larry Galfand, what would you say, finally, we've been discussing this for an hour and 40 minutes. What's your takeaway?
I think it's really important for those who are really concerned about what's happening to get involved. And there are lots and lots of ways to do it. But now's the time. And just sort of, if you don't know anybody who is involved, start asking around. I'm sure you'll find people. It's huge. And there's so much interest in this. And I think it's the most important, most effective way to get engaged in our democracy and be a part of a solution and be a part of a really positive future. It's hard, I think, at times to feel hopeful when you read the news, if you are somebody on the left. And it's a way of feeling hopeful as well. And that's a really positive thing.
Jason, we'll give you the last word.
We are wrapping this up in a nice
note, if you would, please.
Go, Jason.
We are definitely seeing something unprecedented in politics, and this is definitely a manifestation or a product of the divisiveness that is embedded in our politics. But what we're seeing is empowerment, and I would say under the Tea Party as well as under the Resist movement, the empowerment of people who have seen their politicians not doing their job, taking advantage, paying attention to special interest instead of local constituencies, and they're demanding something better. At the end of the day, what that produces is still yet to kind of show itself to us. But our democracy is actually functioning at a high level right now. So I think that's a good place to leave this.
I think that is a good place. Okay. A hopeful note there. We've had with us Jason Gilmore. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Laura Galfand, thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much. And special thanks to you for staying well past the time when I told you we'd have you. But I think it's an illustration that a lot of people are caring about this issue and wanting
Definitely.
To respond. And thanks to our listeners for responding. Keep those comments coming to upraxcess@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Ilan Mastai's novel is out. It's called All Our Wrong Todays. It's about a man who lives in a utopian alternate universe. He has a time travel mishap. He ends up in 2016, and it ain't pretty. That's coming up on Q from PRI, which stands for Public Radio International.
Join us this afternoon at 1 on Utah Public Radio.